Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 172.
This week on the podcast, what is it that drives Hillary Clinton to destroy everything that she loves? What will become of her beloved TPP now?
And with McCarthy gone and the GOP in shambles, we're all in some danger of becoming Speaker of the House. Is there an opt-out form somewhere?
If any of the 158 families determining the next election results are listening, we have a campaign that we'd like to chat with you about. We accept checks.
And Ben Carson's gun control prescription is, you know, just find a human shield or raise an army of casual handgun owners. Hashtag assured success.
Politicon! It happened. We were there. We can confirm that Michelle Bachmann is a real person with human DNA. It was a weird day.
And guys, there's a Democratic debate Tuesday night on CNN. You should definitely watch that.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
And you should definitely do that because it looks awesome.
Yeah, we have a new website. We premiered it last Thursday.
Thanks, Lila.
I figured out how to use the internet to design it.
I didn't.
Brent didn't.
Nope, I just approved it.
He just
when it
approved
was done.
Things, yeah. He posed for some photos of Ray and Hulk.
Yeah, and they're there.
The dogs.
They're cute.
They're there. They're cute. They were podcasting for us.
Uh-huh. Ray Ray's wearing glasses in one of them.
That's right.
As a matter of fact,
she looks very intellectual in that photo.
We were reading a Noam Chomsky book, I believe.
Yes,
photo.
Yes, you were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she loves Noam Chomsky.
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
Yeah. You can't live in this house and not.
No.
It's not allowed.
That would be absurd.
Yeah.
It's also Columbus Day, or will be when you listen to this.
Right.
I don't know if we're supposed to wish you Happy Columbus Day anymore.
I don't think
it's sort
we
of
are.
Passé. Also, in iCal, it's now described as a quote regional
holiday. And I think some cities, individual cities, have like changed it to like. You know, Native Americans.
Right,
say,
or yeah, something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know that there's now some dissension about whether we celebrate Columbus Day or not. Here's what I have to say about that.
I can
understand a desire to move away from a past that privileged the stories of white men who murdered people over the people that they murdered. Totally get it. I dislike any drive that robs us of a national holiday, though.
I do, too.
Because I'm going to work tomorrow, and I don't think I should have to.
I know. I'm going to work tomorrow, too.
Like, that's life, guys. If we want to turn it into a different holiday, that's cool.
Every year when Columbus Day comes up, I always have to ask my coworkers if I get it off.
Yeah.
And I've worked in the same company for 12 years now, and they all look at me like I'm headless.
Yeah.
Because
no,
it's like, no, of course you don't get
Columbus
Day.
But here's the thing. You should, because
you
it's
should.
A holiday.
I agree.
It's a national holiday, and if we want to change it to celebrate something else, that's fine.
Yeah, if the bankers aren't going to work. I don't know why I should have to.
Exactly. Yeah. So, in any case, happy Columbus Day if you have it off. I hope you enjoy your Columbus Day vacation. I'll be thinking of you from the office.
Screw you.
Exactly. We also, as you may know if you follow us on any social media platform, went to Politicon yesterday.
You should do that, by the way, because we were really doing the people's work from Politicon
killing
yesterday
it
on social media.
Politicon. Yeah. If you don't follow us, you may not realize that we're on Instagram because we only post on it really when we're at events. But that's
we're gonna do better.
That's gonna change. And also there's some great photos on there from our Politicon day, some panels that we saw that included some favorites like Michelle Bachmann, but also Edward Snowden.
Yes.
He was interviewed live via satellite at
By the Yes Men
at an event that we went to, and
they tried to trick us into thinking that he was actually there.
We
which
all
everyone
fell for it. Everyone in the audience fell for it. And here's the thing. No one has ever seen Edward Snowden in real life.
Yeah.
So there's
it's like
that.
If somebody tells you that he's there.
Right. You're like, well, who am I to say that's not Edward Snowden? I don't know.
Yeah.
And then they sort of had him up on the satellite while the guy was sitting there, and there was just like a 5-minute
a lot of confusion.
Interlude where everyone was just very confused.
Right. The guy next to me was like, so he didn't get a presidential pardon? I was like,
right,
no.
That's
no,
not what
didn't.
Happened. Yes.
Nope.
Also, Edward Snowden knows a lot of big words.
And a lot of... And he likes to use them in long soliloquies.
Yes. Yeah, he's a real word user.
Yeah.
Real long word user.
We didn't... As interesting as I find Edward Snowden, I have watched that documentary. I have, like... Yeah. I've done all the things. He fascinates me. I was not trying to listen to him for an hour.
No.
Just
30 minutes in, we were like,
tops.
Let's go see Michelle Bachmann speak.
That's what
we
did.
Had her, she explained it all to us.
That's what the name of her thing was. Michelle Bachmann explains it all. She likes Broadway, guys.
Yeah, she did her
she
best.
She really thinks you should go see, what was the Broadway musical? I don't know.
She started with a discussion of how she became a Republican because of a Gore Vidal book.
That's right.
So that was already a great intro to what would become of this conversation.
Yeah.
She is, oddly, it seems like, kind of a reader.
Yeah, she referenced de Tocqueville.
Yeah.
Which I did not see coming at all.
She really, like, it feels like maybe in her, you know, this is why when she speaks, she doesn't sound like Sarah Palin, is because she can string a sentence together. She's just lying in that sentence
right,
often.
Right, exactly.
And she did get very offended when she was questioned about the fact that she lies repeatedly, all, you know, about everything.
Yeah. Whoever was running the panel, who was that?
Avalon.
Yeah, that's right. John Avalon.
John Avalon, yeah.
Basically accused her of...
Right. It was like PolitiFact had to make up a new category for you because you lie so much. And she then decided to stop the discussion and tell us her entire biography to let us know what kind of person she is. Because she didn't want to answer the question about why she lies so fucking much.
And as soon as she started telling the truth, we left.
Exactly. That was when we got sick of that. But we went to a 2016 panel with David Axelrod and James Carville, Newt Gingrich, and Alex Castellanos. That was pretty interesting. Was mm-hmm. Also, David Axelrod, a Stuyvesant alum, so I had to be there to support him. There was a Stuyvesant shout out that we missed.
We didn't sit through one panel, by the way. We were panel hopping.
Yeah. We did not get to go into the Ann Coulter panel. It was
the line
packed.
Was cuckoo.
There was
bananas.
Literally a line to get into.
Well, she was in a couple panels because the one that she actually said some crazy shit in that we're going to talk not, to you yeah, about was
she
not
was,
that
she
one.
She was being inflammatory at the one that we didn't get to go to.
Right.
But she also did an interview with Michael Loftus, who's like a conservative TV host, and basically took credit for Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric.
Yeah.
But then she has this book coming out, or this book that just came out called Adios America, The Left's Plan to Turn Our Country into a Third World Hellhole. She really has a way with words.
She does.
And she says based on that book that, quote, that's where he, Trump, got that spicy stuff on Mexican rapists. But then she also said that if Trump loses the election, she'll be forced to make a career change. She said, I trust Americans to do the right thing on everything, but if we don't stop our current immigration policy, there'll be no point in what I do, no point to Fox News, no point to writing political books. If I ever write another book, unless Trump gets elected, it will be a cookbook.
Now,
and we are waiting with bated breath for that cookbook.
I mean, you know, I have a cookbook collection, by the way. So,
no,
like,
this is
if there's,
something that Brent would love to add.
If there has ever been a cookbook that I want in my collection, it's the Ann Coulter one.
Obviously.
I just can't even, can't tell you how much.
But we did not get to see Ann Coulter,
no.
Unfortunately, but maybe fortunately. It's a double-edged sword with those people. We did catch a glimpse of Denis Kucinich.
That's right.
Which was exciting.
Signing a book.
I'm
assuming
a book.
It's his. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, there were a lot of young Turks walking around. We saw a bunch of panels with Liz Winstead, who was on every panel, it seemed, about comedy and politics.
Yeah, if you don't know what this is, by the way, too, because you might not.
No,
it's the first year of it, but it's basically like a bipartisan, you know,
like
people trying to bring
convention.
People together, like from both sides to sort of like have discussions.
It's
there was a
like
lot of
pro-engagement.
Right,
convention.
Exactly. There was a lot of debating going on of, you know, some various different people. We went to one thing that actually ended up not being that interesting, where they had like
theoretically three
Republicans arguing as if they were Democrats. Mm-hmm.
And that panel included Michael Steele.
Michael
and
Steele
and John Fugelsang and Stephanie Miller were on the left.
I mean, pretending they were Republicans.
It was an interesting idea. No, it was kind of fun because I feel like the one thing that people forget about people in politics is they like to argue. It's not like you never get to be in a situation where like it's fun to debate because everyone in Washington has their head up their ass. But like that is what draws those people into politics is their love of debating. That's what we love about politics.
Totally.
So it was kind of fun because I always am interested in watching a crazy, you know, take no prisoners debate between Democrats and Republicans. I'm interested in hearing how Republicans debate. It tells me a lot about what their thought process is.
Yeah.
It's worth listening to.
Yeah.
So it's not really just like we like only, you know, only like listening to people on the left. That's not really what makes you a well-rounded knower of politics.
No.
But so this was kind of a fun event because it took a lot of people that I would not have otherwise gotten to see. I would not pay to see Newt Gingrich.
No.
But I would wander into a panel that he was speaking on with David Axelrod about 2016.
Totally.
And listen to what their differences of opinion are.
Yeah.
Everyone's opinion basically in that panel was like, trust the establishment. It'll be fine.
I know.
Except David Axelrod, who I feel like interested, kind of subtly was like, Hillary Clinton needs to get her shit together.
Yeah.
He was the only one who, he had worked for her on a Senate campaign in 2000.
Right.
And he also obviously worked for Obama in 2008. And so,
basically said she's not the same candidate.
And basically
now
said
that
she was not the same candidate. And unless she can find that candidate that was, you know, a likable candidate that people respected, then she's never going to get elected.
Well, and he also brought up what I thought was totally spot on. And I always thought this about 2008, too. She almost became a candidate that I could have voted for toward the end when she really when it was sort of like, you know, desperation time.
Yeah.
Because she was really, that's when she really sort of like took up the women's issues. Mm-hmm. It was all about the glass ceiling. It was all about, you know, I mean, wrongfully making sure all the votes, you know, were in the primaries got counted before she sort of, you know, gave in or whatever. And then just kind of that campaign went on for too long. But I mean, like, that's when she was tolerable.
Yeah.
And
no, she, when she gets desperate, is a much more tolerable candidate than when she's not desperate.
Yeah.
She's not a good front runner.
No.
And that's, I think that that's maybe been the problem that she's had this entire time, is that she comes into every election as the inevitable winner.
Right.
And she can't play that role.
No.
She just can't do it. Some people could play that role. Bill could have played that role, I think.
Yeah.
But she can't. That's not her thing. Yeah. We also went to an interesting panel with Black Lives Matter. Patrice Cullors was there, and there were some family members who had
Torre
lost.
Torre was moderating it.
And they were talking about this ACLU app that sounds fascinating, where if you, they'll like automatically upload a video. If you take like a video of an act of police violence or some sort of police misbehavior, they will automatically upload it so that the ACLU has access to it. So even if they take away your phone or break your phone or make you erase it, it's already been recorded, because that's how they get a lot of these convictions. When they do get convictions in these cases,
totally,
it's always bystander video. You know, the police video doesn't get released to the public for the most part,
right.
So there's no way to really trust that that's a worthwhile thing. But so that was kind of interesting. Yeah. Also, we should mention that the Tamir Rice verdict came back today, and they they cleared all those officers of wrongdoing. So it's okay. It's okay to shoot a 12-year-old boy in a Cleveland park if you're into that sort of thing.
Yep.
If he's black.
Right. But only.
But only if he's black. Right. Yeah. Yeah. We don't recommend trying to shoot white 12-year-olds. That would not end in the same sort of inaction.
But if you're a gun owner dreaming of killing someone, which you are, if
you apparently can just feel free to do that in parks, in children playgrounds in Cleveland. That's a perfectly reasonable shoot first, ask questions later.
That's right.
They love that. Yeah. So in any case, that was Politicon. It was amazing.
It was fun.
Hope they do this every month.
I would assume they will. I know. I'm assuming that they'll try and at least do it every year.
Yeah, or at least at election years.
I
don't know what you.
Maybe
why not do it though?
Well, next
when
year
not
would
election
still be.
Next year is still before the election. Oh, next year's going to be great. Probably.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah, and we recommend that if you, you know,
if you're in the LA,
area, in the LA area next year, to the tickets were free. It was you know, super easy to do.
And
totally worth it. Yeah. Big news of this week, we're about to bury in exchange for less big news that we think is the most important news of the week.
Right, exactly.
Guys,
you probably think we're about to talk about Kevin McCarthy, and we're not.
We're not. We're gonna get to that.
Right.
But first, we're gonna get to the fact that this was the week that Hillary Clinton came out against the TPP.
Ah, yes.
The old against free trade Hillary Clinton that we have never met.
She was for it before she was against it. That's gonna be. They're gonna bust that old
chestnut
out of the closet for this one.
Well, we have a direct quote from her when she was Secretary of State in 2012.
Yeah.
When in talking about the TPP, she says it, quote, sets the gold standard in trade agreements to open, free, transparent, fair trade, the kind of environment that has the rule of law and a level playing field.
Yes, and the reason that she knew to say this in 2012 is because she worked on it in
the State
Department.
She was one of the architects of the TPP.
Right. She wasn't just a casual reader of the TPP. Just, you know, oh, hey, that TPP thing sounds fun.
Yeah.
No, she...
She was a huge proponent of our pivot towards Asia. That was her idea. This is all, she's Secretary of State. Then she walked around after being Secretary of State, has been for months now saying that she needs to really see the final agreement before she can make a decision. Even though it seems like she, if anyone, might have the inside track into what the agreement contains, because she is one of the people who wrote it.
But fine.
She's talking to Judy Woodruff on PBS on Wednesday, which was 2 days after it was finalized. On Tuesday, she had said that she would, quote, be diving into it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Then, on Wednesday, she's on TV and says that she is against the TPP, or, you know, what she has, quote, learned about it. The exact quote is, what I know about it as of today, I'm not in favor of what I've learned about it.
Yeah, she gave a very lawyerly answer.
So, there's definitely room for her to change her mind in this answer, because as of tomorrow, she might learn something new that she actually already knew in 2012 that might remind her that she's actually very much in favor of free trade.
Yes.
But so, in any case, she is now sort of putting she's putting her own administration into a little bit of a bind here.
Yeah.
Because she's basically kind of left saying that, like, they must have fucked this up after I left.
Yeah,
exactly. Because she was the one who started working on it.
That's Obama and John Kerry's fault.
Yeah,
like that's the only.
When I was there, it was a perfect trade agreement.
It was the gold standard.
It was the gold standard
under me.
Right, but now,
now
that you know, John Kerry's gotten his dirty hands all over it.
Right.
I don't know what to trust anymore.
No.
And on this Wednesday, I've decided to be against it. We don't know as of Thursday what her policy was.
Yeah.
Also, hilariously, there were a couple articles that we pulled stuff from for this, and one of them in Slate had a hilarious flashback that I had forgotten about, but I remember being just delicious in 2008, where both the Clinton and Obama campaigns, quote, were pledging to, like, renegotiate NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And then they both of them got caught telling Canadian diplomats that they were just saying it for political reasons, yep. that they were lying.
Yeah.
And then obviously they didn't renegotiate NAFTA, as they were both in the position to do that and had no intention of doing that at all. But that sort of feels like what's happening here.
Yeah.
She sort of, it's like such an overtly political thing that she's done here that it almost doesn't matter what she thinks about the TPP.
Right.
What we've learned from this is not her thoughts on the TPP, because we already knew those because she wrote the TPP.
Right.
What we've learned is her thoughts on the fact that she'll say anything to be elected.
Right. Well, and that's what you and I were talking about this earlier today, and I just said, like, I realize that she sort of is, like, you know, going with the political winds here because, like, you know, Sanders is against it. Trump is against it. You know,
the left and right.
Obviously, Labor is against it. And she's got, she wants them, you know, on her side.
She wants more than just Randy Weingarten.
And I just wish that she would have, I would have appreciated more had she explained the reasons why she felt like she was in favor of this.
Right.
Because there is not a single person on earth
who
buys this.
No.
Like, this is not... we heard this, actually. A few people said this yesterday at Politicon, too. And I think, like, they were even people who were not necessarily from the right. But, I mean, like, this is... No. You know, it's common knowledge that she is probably for the TPP.
Right.
This is not
Hillary Clinton, we know...
Right.
...is for... That the public knows is for the TPP.
Right.
This weird, I'll say anything Hillary Clinton is an unknown entity. And because of that, it makes her seem really inauthentic.
And that's the problem she's already having anyway.
Exactly.
Like, this just adds to her problem. I realize she thinks she probably fixes, like, a short-term political problem that she's having. Like, just in terms of, like, literally slipping poll numbers.
Yeah.
But, like, this just adds to her global problem.
No, exactly. Well, and this is, I think, something, you know, we were talking on the way to lunch today about how she's going to fare versus Bernie in the debates that are coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about the debates, but we wrote our thing on the debates, so we...
Oh, yeah, you should read that.
You should read that. We'll tell you what to we tell you what to look out for. But, you know, we were kind of talking about what happens to a Bernie Sanders, who's not a particularly likable-seeming guy in a debate like this. And, you know, we had a slight disagreement about whether where that would leave them, because, Brent sort of thinks that he'll kind of take a hit, you know, in terms of how this is covered and then in terms of how it's later perceived.
Right.
You know, you were referencing Al Gore and his shrug.
His infamous
size. And I was saying sort of the opposite, which is that I think that Bernie Sanders has sort of transcended that kind of analysis because he's not likable in the traditional sense of a candidate.
Right.
He's angry and, like, that's what people connect with. So as long as he's angry, he doesn't have to be likable.
Yeah.
Because he seems authentic. But I feel like what she is going to have to talk about at this debate and for the rest of time now until she changes her mind again, which she will after the convention, I'm sure, is, and everyone, by the way, knows that she's going to change her mind after the convention, so it doesn't matter that she said this, but she's going to have to explain how this doesn't make her the world's most inauthentic person.
It's easy,
she's a robot.
Right. It's easy to look like the authentic person in a room with Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
I mean, like,
right. The thing that is driving this election, that is driving her slipping poll numbers, is that Bernie Sanders is just saying whatever the fuck he thinks. That's what people are connecting to. Now, the press is connecting with him differently than people are. That's why they're constantly surprised that his numbers are much higher than they should be.
Yeah.
Because the press doesn't perceive that. And it sort of goes against the sort of knowledge of, you know, our sort of pre-existing notion of what it is to be a successful candidate and what that looks like. But that's what people are responding to. Meanwhile, all of her reasons for not supporting the TPP were patently absurd because they're all things...
Well, they don't make sense.
They don't make sense because they're all things that she's not in favor of. Or not a good advocate for.
Right.
You know, she first of all talks about that we haven't gotten the balance right on trade in the past.
Well, that's
who basically invented our current trade policy?
Yeah,
the Clintons. So, I mean, if we haven't gotten the balance right on it, then that's sort of her walking back a mistake she's already been a part
of. This is why NAFTA needed renegotiating,
guys. But then she also tries to shift the blame to Republicans for somehow making the environment wrong for free trade here. This is bonkers because the intention of free trade has never been to benefit American workers. It's not good for American workers.
No.
We know this for a fact now because we have experience with free trade and it has been bad for American workers. So the idea that it's somehow the Republicans' fault for not fostering an economy in which free trade works for Americans is absurd.
I know. Well, and she says that it's because the Republicans have weakened U.S. competitiveness. But the problem isn't U.S. competitiveness because we are already... The problem is putting our workers in competition
with people who can afford to work at much lower wages.
Like, literally, as Bernie Sanders said this morning on Meet the Press,
for 30 cents an hour,
30 cents an hour, 50
cents an hour,
basically.
No, I mean,
so it's not our workers are it's not that our workers aren't competitive. It's no, just it's that they can't be... Is she trying to imply that we should be paying our workers 30 cents an hour and then they can compete with the workers who are in Vietnam?
No, exactly. And this
doesn't make any sense.
I'd like to blame the Republican Party for many things as we possibly can, but this is not just a Republican foible.
No.
This is a problem that both parties have been a part of.
Yeah.
And this is a problem that is based in the concept that free trade can be somehow equal between nations where the cost of living is drastically different and where the economy is drastically different. It can't be. That's not a thing.
Right.
That's why protectionist policies happened in the first place.
Yep.
They were to protect people from this kind of bullshit.
Right.
It has always been cheaper to live in Asia.
Yeah.
That is why we don't, you know, that is why we don't work for the same wages as people in Asia.
Yep.
Because they can live more cheaply there. That is not who we want to be in direct competition with as workers. But and it's great for corporations.
Well, and besides the fact
that
they can live cheaper, too. They're also, you know, I mean, that's borderline slave
But the other thing is lot of these free trade agreements, and that's, they always try to be like, it's good because then we can help, you know, we can help sort of...
Lift these countries up,
make sure that their worker protections in place for them and whatever. And it just, the thing is, it doesn't ever come back on us. We can have these worker protections and we should.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, free trade is for corporations. It's for the guys at the top. It doesn't trickle down. Nothing has ever trickled down in history.
So the
idea that it's like the Republicans' fault and she would otherwise be in favor of this, but because of the Republicans... Right. Creating a bad economy for us.
Yeah.
They're, you know, whatever. We're not competitive anymore. That's not the problem.
Free trade is not the problem. Yeah.
In any case.
Yeah.
I would love to know what the goals of free trade are as she sees them.
Yeah.
I would love to know what her thoughts are on why it's such a great idea.
I would too.
Except for the TPP.
I know. Well, and she has those ideas because 45 times she's spoken
CNN compiled this list of 45 times that she spoke up in favor of the TPP between 2010 and 2013. It was basically any time that she appeared before any sort of business entity or anything that had to do with Asia. Or Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah.
Any time at all. And she said things like, now we've seen how bilateral trade benefits both sides. I would argue that we haven't seen that.
No.
We are very committed to the TPP, and we want to expedite the negotiations as much as possible, so we're exploring ways that we can try to drive this agenda. I'm absolutely convinced that opening up markets in Asia amongst all of us, and doing so in a way that creates win-win situations so that people feel that trade is in their interests, is like, this is not what happens with free trade.
It's not.
It's like when you call a bill the magical unicorn bill, and it, like, cuts funding to single mothers. It's like this kind of like bait and switch.
It totally is. It
doesn't make any sense.
No.
In any case, now we get to the big news.
Yeah.
Kevin McCarthy, Mr. California Republican wheeler dealer.
Next in line. Speaker of the House.
Yeah, majority leader in the House. Out of the running for Speaker.
Dropped out this week.
The official floor vote was scheduled for October 29th. He was widely expected to get enough votes, but it was getting to be a little close.
It was, yes. That widely expectedness was coming down a little
decreasing.
Bit. And he did not help his chances with what we talked about last
no,
week.
With the Benghazi gaffe.
Where he
admitted that was a political witch hunt to take down Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly.
The Freedom Caucus also had started to throw their weight behind Daniel Webster, a Republican nobody from Florida.
It's like a first or second term
or
something.
Just like a rando. They love doing that, though.
Yeah.
So they were looking at losing. He could only afford to lose 29 votes. He was looking at potentially losing 30 to 40 in that shift.
Right. There's 240 some Republicans. I can't remember.
And 47,
you need,
I think.
247. And you need 218.
Yeah.
So...
Looking nerve-wracking.
Yes.
So now Boehner and company are trying to draft Paul Ryan, who does not want to be the speaker. He's the head of the Ways and Means Committee, and that's, I think, why they're sort of like looking for someone who's anybody to do this. And he's kind of, you know, he was the VP. Sort of like the nutso VP candidate.
People think that he has sort of like the gravitas. You know, he can sort of, he's you know, mainstream enough, but he also sort of like has the, you know, some sort of credibility with like the far right with like his
he's
insane
got those
budgets.
Very
that he's
disturbing
done.
Photos that were taken of him in
workout
garb where he looks like a teenage boy from the
80s. He's got the crazy eyes that the Freedom Caucus can relate to.
And the man child looks
that
people who don't like experience respond to.
Bingo.
But he's currently preying on it.
He's preying on it. That's right.
But he has also released a statement saying that he is not going to be the candidate, so nobody knows what he's up to.
Yeah.
Boehner's basically just in there trying to harass him into doing it.
Yeah.
By the way, we should mention at this point that you don't have to be in the House to be the Speaker. Anyone can be Speaker of the House. So if you have suggestions of who you'd like to see as Speaker of the House, tweet us.
Yeah.
We'll Well, maybe we'll start a campaign. We don't know.
Yeah.
We're not afraid.
Yeah.
We feel like at this point, the American people should probably take this into their own hands.
Yes.
The Republicans are fucking it up.
Yeah, they totally are. And so, if I were Paul Ryan, I wouldn't want it.
No.
Because whoever...
If I were a human being,
whoever steps into this is going to have the same problems that John Boehner was having. Yeah. Like, even if he ends up with enough of the support of the Freedom Caucus to win the 218 votes that he needs...
It's a shit show.
The reality of that Republican caucus is not going to change just because, like, he swoops in and is the speaker all of a sudden.
The Republicans have got to start starving these Tea Partiers of funding.
And then he will never be able to run for higher office if he wants to again. I mean, imagine John Boehner trying to run for president right now. I mean, his base hates him, and it's because of these, you know, 40 Freedom Caucus goons in the House who won't let him do anything, and his hands have been tied, so... Who would want the job?
No, it's a terrible job.
It's a terrible job.
I'm surprised that... I think Boehner was just too much of an idiot to not take it in the first place. Because I feel like they picked, like, the weak link to take it to begin with. He was kind of weak linky.
Oh,
like, yeah. You know, like that... I mean, he wasn't necessarily, like, a great powerhouse in the Republican Party. He was, like, a guy who cried in public all the time. Like...
And was orange. Yeah.
Like, that's not your biggest power player.
No.
So in any case... There are some exciting theories as to why McCarthy dropped out. We've mentioned that it's possibly related to the Clinton-Benghazi gaffe. We've mentioned that it's possible that he just didn't have the votes and saw that coming down the pike. There's also a few other theories that are pretty interesting and exciting. There was this weird letter that Walter Jones, who's a Republican from North Carolina, sent to Kathy McMorris Rogers, who chairs the Republican conference.
A lot of people thought she might run. She's not going
to. She's not going to run. Yeah, right. She was somebody that we were talking about. They should get a woman in there.
I think they should,
if they were
too.
Not complete idiots, which they are, they would get a woman in there. Because they need someone who can whip those people into shape. And I just don't see a guy being able to control those people. But I feel like those people hate women enough that they'd be very scared of a female speaker. In any case, sometimes you need... It's like how when you're on a shoot and you have a bunch of set PAs and you have only guys, they all act super lazy the whole time. And if you hire one female set PA, everyone works harder. And I don't know why. It's not... You hire one person who can't lift things that are as heavy as everyone else or whatever... But, like, every time that I was ever a female set PA, everyone just worked harder. And if I was a female office PA, they didn't. Like, I would watch them being lazier on the shoots where I was an office PA than when I was a set PA. And I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
I'm, like, bossy, but I'm not more bossy than anyone else. I mean, everyone on a set is bossy.
Yeah.
PAs are the worst. But it's, like, I feel like they need a woman in there to fix this problem.
Yeah.
Because they're not fixing it themselves.
Yeah.
They're being too stupid. In any case, Walter Jones... sent this, like, vaguely worded letter to Kathy McMorris Rogers where he says that any leadership candidate who has committed, quote, misdeeds since joining Congress should drop out of the running. But it was sort of timed in a way that made it feel like he was saying that Kevin McCarthy had some, like, skeletons in his closet.
Right.
Maybe they were this. Because there were also a bunch of emails sent to Republican lawmakers by Steve Baer, who's a nutbag who's often emailing Republicans with nonsense.
GOP donor.
He's a GOP donor and... like, nutbag person who has too many email addresses for his own good, claiming that Kevin McCarthy was having a secret extramarital affair with Renee Elmers from North Carolina.
A representative
from North Carolina.
Congresswoman Renee Elmers.
And that is part of what was happening.
Yeah. So, apparently those rumors have been, like, swirling for years.
So they're obviously true.
Exactly. Yeah.
You don't have rumors swirling for years if they're not true. In any case, Bear's kind of a nutso. He is famous for sending, after the 2013 government shutdown, he sent a bunch of emails to Republicans saying, "Now let us dine on rhino flesh." Rhino meaning Republicans in name only. He's up to those kinds of shenanigans.
So
it's possible that there were some scandals about to break.
Yeah.
If not this, then some other scandals.
Right.
So now we're left in a situation where the Republicans might need the Democrats to bail them out.
This is the best part.
Good.
It's come to this.
It's
I love it.
Again,
I mean, we talk all the time about how the Republicans oftentimes need the Democrats to
pass anything
to bail them out because of this Freedom Caucus makes it so if all the Democrats vote no, the Freedom Caucus votes no.
I want to point out, by the way, that we essentially have a parliamentary system at this point. Like, this is not how a two-party system works.
No,
we have
not
a three-party system right now.
Well, we do. Yeah, exactly.
And
well,
the coalition is between Republicans and Democrats. It's not between Republicans and Tea Partiers.
No, this would basically... So what they're saying now is that, you know, there are maybe Paul Ryan, but, you know, not even necessarily Paul Ryan is going to get all of these Freedom Caucus people to vote for him because he's probably a little establishment-y.
Anyone who could get the other 200 to vote for them cannot get... the 40,
the 40 of and those 40 four. Obviously don't have 218.
No,
because they're 40,
exactly.
So they're 180 short.
Right.
So that leaves everyone in the House votes for the Speaker. Of
right.
course, it's the Democrats obviously would just vote.
It's traditional that the lead party chooses their representative, and then, you know, it right. naturally, because they have more votes, they are able to elect right. the Speaker. In this situation, though, we've said this many times that Nancy Pelosi is basically the Speaker of the House still, because nothing really happens without her permission.
Without at least a few of her
people's votes.
Voting.
Yeah. So basically now we're in a position where we just sort of have to look forward to who the whole House could approve, as opposed to caring who the Republicans themselves can approve, because they can't approve anybody.
Right. Well, and I think this would be, I think this is a great idea, actually,
yeah.
for Republicans, too. I mean, yeah. I know that they would hate it. I know their base would hate it. They would hate having to go there, and I
right.
get that. But on some level, like, I think they should just form a coalition government. I
yeah.
mean, like, I
no.
think that it's the only way that anything is...
If they're...
It's
oh,
the only
the
way
mic,
that...
I was so
it's,
excited.
The, it's not just the only way that we're ever going to get a speaker. It's the only way that we're ever going to get
done.
Anything out of the House and sent to the Senate.
Exactly. And frankly, I think for... Like, we're still in a... We're talking about a situation where 40 guys are holding everyone up.
Right.
There are...
There's almost 200 Democrats.
It is better for everyone else if shit is getting done.
Yes.
Those people... There
Fuck
are
them.
Still 180 not reasonable, but semi-reasonable Republicans who are there to do their jobs.
Right.
They are not there to obstruct things.
Right.
There are 40 guys who are there to obstruct things.
Right.
So, at some point, they need to move forward. Like, they need to have something they can show for it.
Yeah. And it seems like they know it. I mean, there's Charlie Dent, who is, you know, kind of a moderate. He's from Pennsylvania. He's been talking about it this week. And he said, he told reporters that after McCarthy bailed out, he said, "I suspect at some point, if we can't get 218 Republicans to vote for a speaker candidate, we'll have to assume a bipartisan coalition to elect a speaker." And then Peter King said...
We'll do whatever it takes.
That, but he said we should do whatever it takes,
yeah.
and we'll go down the road if we have to. So, I mean, you know, who knows, but that would be delicious.
Oh my God, it'd be amazing. I know. I'm very excited to see what's happening
yeah.
with this.
I could see enough Democrats, actually maybe voting for Paul Ryan.
Maybe.
I mean, even though that they would probably think he's terrible, but just in... The thing is that the Democrats can't do anything if there's no Speaker of the House either, because the
right.
Speaker's who brings the bills.
That's
to
true.
The, so, they need a sort of
I feel
partner
like though,
on the other
with
side
their
to be able to do
leverage,
with.
They should pull for a more moderate
I
person.
I totally agree.
Because you could still get 180 Republican votes with a more moderate person, and you could probably get the makeup 40 to 50 Democratic votes you'd need
yeah.
to really, like, have a mandate enough to, like, do something.
To actually do anything.
But,
right.
I mean, I feel like you would sort of... Once they have the power to depose whoever it is,
right.
then... They should also get something out of the deal.
Yes, they
They're
should.
Terrible negotiators, by the
yeah.
way, so
well,
who knows
Pelosi's
what will
a little
happen.
Better than
that's
some.
True.
Yeah.
She's no Harry Reid.
Yeah. Although she has said that she's at least... she has no intention of helping them. I mean, unless
no.
it they... Unless
this
she has to. I mean,
their
it doesn't...
issue, because this is a presidential election year. If they
I
had
know.
Let this happen mid, you know, during the midterms, I could see the Democrats being like, okay, we
yeah.
need something to show for ourselves here. But, like, what incentive do they have to help them out at this point?
Yeah.
They've been nothing but assholes. They're threatening to shut down the government as soon as they get the ability to do anything back in the House.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
No, and it doesn't help them in the... I mean, it doesn't it certainly doesn't help them when they're trying to... re-win the Senate, when they're trying to
yeah.
re-win the House, and they're trying to win a presidential election that is, you know, just starts off bleak for them anyway. You know, I mean, I was watching Meet the Press this morning, and they were talking about this, and they had one of these guys from the Freedom Caucus, and then one of the sort of, like, more vocal establishment guys, and they let the round table question them, and Hugh Hewitt, who is a conservative radio host, really laid into the both of them,
mm-hmm.
and was like, what are you two thinking?
Yeah.
Like, it sort of boggles the mind.
Yeah.
Of even probably Republicans on
no,
some
I,
level.
Well, I think that a majority of Republicans are feeling mind-boggled by this situation.
Yeah.
And that's... I think that, you know, it's because this is such a vocal minority, you forget that they are a very extremely minor minority.
Minor minority.
They're not... It's not like they have almost half the votes or anything. They're not
no.
even close to... They don't even have a quarter of the votes. They're just... 40 random assholes
right.
who are kind of idiots.
They only have enough to keep Republicans from being able to pass something without
them. They only have
them.
Enough
That's
to
it.
Shoot their own party in the foot. They don't have
yep.
enough to advance anything.
Right.
And so there's no reason to heed to them. I mean, there are more Democrats that have more in common with most of the Republican Party yes. too many Democrats,
right.
than these 40.
They at least,
there are more than 40 Democrats right. who are basically Republicans in the House right now.
Bingo. Totally.
I mean, that's like minus maybe 7, they'd all be fine in the Republican Party. Like, yeah. I mean, any Clintonian era Democrat,
oh, yeah.
any Southern Democrat, anyone who's not like, you know, who's not from like lower Manhattan, it's like, it. I know. It's yes. like, I mean,
yeah.
God, our representative used to be in the Blue Dogs, for God's sakes. Like,
he what? Represents West Hollywood.
He represents West Hollywood. Like, guys, it's not that hard. You no. have plenty of people to talk about terrible ideas with.
Yeah.
In any case. Also, the New York Times today ran this fascinating article that is both fascinating, but also horrifying.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
About how 158 families have basically donated almost half of the donations that have been made into the 2016 race thus far.
Yes, there's 120 million households in the United States.
Yeah, if you
States.
Need, for reference, 120 million households.
Right.
Of those 120 million, 158 straight non-million households
yeah.
Have donated nearly 50% of the money. And then yeah. when you add the next 200 families, all of whom have donated more than $100,000.
Yeah.
Then you get well over 50%.
Yes.
This is, by the way, of those 158 families, 138 back Republicans and only 20 back Democrats. Yeah. I would guess the 20 are mostly in the entertainment sector and Warren Buffett.
Yes, exactly. Well, and the insane thing is that there's, there's the 158 families.
Right.
And their contributions have totaled 176 million.
Yeah.
So they have, are each...
On average, giving more than $1 million.
$1 million.
This, by the way, a problem created by Citizens United. They're all taking advantage of Citizen United laws. These are donations of super PACs. They're in excess of what the individual
right, because as an individual, you can only give $2,700. Yeah. To an actual campaign or to a party.
But you can give as much money as you want to a super PAC.
That's right.
And this is where we've landed.
Yeah.
So, also, a majority of these people come from just two industries, finance and energy.
Oh, I'm shocked.
Two of the most destructive sectors of the economy. Mm-hmm. They're, not shockingly, mostly white, older, and male. Mm-hmm. Although, almost half of them are foreign-born. That's an interesting thing about it. And most of them are actually self-made millionaires. It's not a lot of family money. It's a lot of people that started hedge funds and things like that.
Sure.
And energy companies. Yeah. Still evil, yep. just not family evil.
That's right.
Well,
at least Donald Trump's going to tax them.
That's right.
right?
yeah. That's. But also, by comparison, I mean, the donations that they're making, as outrageous as they are such a minuscule amount of their income. They, you know, the article compares one Chicago hedge fund millionaire who gave $300,000 being the equivalent in relative to his income to a typical family giving $21.17.
God.
So this is like pocket change to them.
God, I've given more than he has, though.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Showed him. They say not since before Watergate have so few people and businesses provided so much early money in a campaign.
Wow.
Mostly through channels legalized by Citizens United 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And also, most of them are just living in 9 cities that rich people live in, including Brentwood and Bel Air over
yeah, of
here.
Course. Yes.
There's River Oaks in Houston. There's Indian Creek Village, which is this private island near Miami that is gated and has a golf course or something like that. This is the most disturbing fact, I think. The three families who have provided the largest donations to date, that would be the Wilkes family of Texas, their trucking and equipment for shale fields empire, the Mercers of New York hedge fund, Robert Mercer is a hedge funder, and the Neugebauers, which is a Texas private equity investors, they have all backed Ted Cruz.
Oh, God.
So the biggest donors of the 158 people that are actually going to decide the next election in a country of 300 million.
They have really questionable taste.
Have very questionable taste. So that's horrifying news.
Yeah.
And we take that with us as we listen to Ben Carson talk about guns and the time that he got held up at Popeyes.
Oh my God. This might have been my favorite story this week, actually. What I love about this story is that, like, he just sort of, like, refused to stop digging himself
into a further hole. Well, that's his M.O.
It totally is, yes. And he's supposed to be a smart person.
No, here
is
what... I cannot believe how much mileage Andy Borowitz has gotten out of Ben Carson of late, making fun of the fact that neurosurgeons are supposed to be smart, where it's basically like him making jokes about how the neurosurgeon community is finally relieved that people can stop holding them up as geniuses thanks to Ben Carson.
Like, on a related note to Andy Borowitz, and I sent this to you because I knew you would immediately say thought crime, but remember when he was like George W. Bush now relishing the spotlight as smarter Bush brother or something like that?
That's right. He did thought crime me recently. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, but anyway, so this all started this week because early in the week, you know, at the end of last week, we had the community college shooting
in
Oregon. So, of course, everybody was getting asked what they wanted to do about gun control, what they would do in a situation like this, whatever. So he had a real genius answer,
yes,
where he said, quote, "I would not just stand there and let him shoot me."
That's what most of us would do.
Obviously. Yes.
We love just standing and waiting to get shot.
So besides the fact that that's ridiculous, it was also totally offensive to all of the people who were shot.
None of whom were just standing there waiting to be shot.
It was just their fault because they were like, shoot me now.
Yeah. I'm just standing here.
So anyway, he got into some, and he went on to say, I would say, hey guys, everybody attack him. He may shoot me, but he can't get us all. So it's sort of like, you know, group effort. Yes, could just stop the shooter.
Yes.
Anyway, so that, of course, everyone was met with, that was met with outcry.
Yes.
So in an attempt to clarify,
mm-hmm,
he had a tall tale about a time that he was at a Popeye's chicken.
Oh, God.
In
Baltimore.
I hope he was on Tuesday because they have deals on Tuesday at Popeye's. Yeah. Kim Eaton and I used to go to Popeye's on Tuesdays when she and I were living together, by the way. But anyway, and I saw her post on Facebook, actually. She goes, Ben Carson does not deserve Popeye's.
I saw that,
by
too.
By the way. So good. Anyway.
You guys remember Kim Eaton, our frequent guest.
Yeah, she's been on a couple times, yeah. Anyway, so the story is ridiculous because he said that while he was at this Popeye's, a gunman came in.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing appropriate sirens right now.
As we mentioned the word shooting, they're gone.
Shooting, yeah. Oh. Okay, so he's at a Popeye's and a gunman comes in, pulls the gun on him, and apparently what he says is, the guy comes in, put the gun in my ribs, and I just said, I believe you want the guy behind the counter.
He just deflected to the guy behind the counter. He just decided, he's like, no, shoot him. Don't shoot me. Uh-huh. I'm just a customer
and
here.
And obviously no one was shot.
Right.
By the way, so this story is obviously made up.
There's no police record of it.
Baltimore police has already said we don't have a record of this. So he didn't shoot either of them. And obviously, like, if the Popeyes would have been robbed, there would have been
a record of that.
I mean, like, you...
Unless this is an era of Baltimore that is so dangerous and crime-ridden that it wasn't even worth reporting.
I can't imagine Ben Carson was going there, unless you have to go there to get to the Popeyes.
He's like the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins was like, I'm just going to go to this random Popeyes that I might be killed in.
No.
Like, that's not it.
No.
Also, he had he might have solved the Holocaust for us if he had been there at the time.
It didn't end there.
No.
Because later in the week...
We got to hear all of his musings about how we would have prevented the Holocaust.
Yes. Because...
He tells CNN...
Yes.
I think the likelihood of Hitler being able to accomplish his goals would have been greatly diminished if the people had been armed.
Mm.
I'm telling you, there is a reason those dictatorial people take guns first.
Well, first off, they didn't take the guns first. They took them sort of late in the game.
Right.
And also, that's fucking bonkers.
That's bonkers banana town crazy pants.
Yes. And he has said this before. He said it in his book. He has said it... And also, people on the right are often talking about this because Hitler did go and take guns away from the citizens. So this is a thing that the right often likes to say as a reason that why we have the Second Amendment, which is, I mean, they can say that if they want. But the thing that is bonkers about it is because as Jonathan Greenblatt, who's the director of the Anti-Defamation League, said, it's mind-bending to suggest that personal firearms in the hand of the small number of Germany's Jews, which at the time were about 214,000, could have stopped the totalitarian onslaught of Nazi Germany when the armies of Poland, France, Belgium, and numerous other countries were overwhelmed by the Third Reich.
And I think that's the important point here.
Right, exactly. So to think a couple hundred thousand people with handguns were going to stop Hitler from killing all the Jews when France couldn't do it is the mind-bending.
It's too stupid
for a neurosurgeon to
for
come
any
up with
for person,
anyone
for yes. a child
for a child exactly That's, yeah it's,
and it's not logic
yes
but I mean we've talked about this before. You know, people said that after the Aurora shooting, as if everyone in the theater should have pulled out a handgun and
started shooting blindly at everyone else.
I mean,
in the theater.
Everyone would have died at that
situation.
In the theater would have died. Like, this has always been a thing that they've brought up to suggest. Like, I have even said, you know, we at one point years ago, I was talking with a mutual friend of ours about whether she wanted a gun because she was a woman living alone. And I was like, the problem is, like, do you want to be the person that brought the gun?
Right.
Like, once you have brought a gun, there's at least one gun in the situation and someone can get shot. If there's only one gun and it's not your gun, maybe you're no threat and you don't get shot, and maybe you do, and that's terrible. But you bringing a gun just means two people might get shot. It doesn't reduce your chances of being shot.
Well, and we all know the stats about the
But this is like
you being shot with your own gun if you have it in the hallway.
Yeah, right. You're more likely to be shot by your own gun.
I can't remember. We don't have
it. No, it's like, but I mean, it's a huge disparity.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, this he didn't stop there. No.
I mean, it only.
It only gets better.
He had to talk about this every day this week.
He's just having minor ideas every day that get dumber.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, today he said, that's one of the real purposes of having a constitution. I think the founders were really quite insightful into looking at possibilities and understanding what has happened in other places and trying to put together something that would prevent that from happening here. Apparently, the founders, before writing the constitution, saw what happened in Nazi Germany.
In the 1700s.
200 years later.
200 years
and
later.
And right. thought to themselves, we want to prevent that we here. Like we'll make sure everyone has guns. Thank God they had the foresight to know what was going to happen in Nazi Germany.
And by Didn't have the foresight to stop it. A time machine.
Right, a time machine. Didn't choose to stop the Holocaust. I know. Just chose to learn from it retroactively. Like, oh, God. And then that was how Donald Trump ended up looking like the only genius in the polls.
I know. It's like Donald Trump had his first week of being like the reasonable person in the race.
Well, we knew that Ben Carson
once got
going.
That's probably bad for him, by the way.
We knew that once Ben Carson got going, he would have some zingers. Like, he was getting a slow start because I think he's kind of quiet and talks too slow.
Yeah.
So no one's listening to him most of the time.
Right. Well, it's too boring,
It's too boring. Yeah. It's like listening... It's like how the Pope was talking too slow.
And that's because English is like his fourth language.
Right. I mean, he speaks like 500 languages.
Yeah.
Ben Carson, single language speaker.
Right.
But it just... It's hard to listen to someone when they're talking that slow. You lose track of where the sentence started.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what happens with me and Ben Carson.
And that's his plan.
And that's his plan, exactly. Anyway, now we want to talk about how California is just crushing it.
This is great. I almost just said my home state.
Right.
And it's not.
No.
But it is now.
But it's a great home state.
I have now lived in Los Angeles longer than I have lived in any one singular city in my life. I did live in Iowa, the state,
longer. Right.
But like... We are just really fucking killing it.
This is what you get when you have just sort of a quiet governor who just goes and does his shit.
Right. And a supermajority.
And a supermajority in Democrats. Of Democrats in the House.
Right.
This is... Well, I was just saying to Brent earlier, I was like, could you have ever imagined in the Schwarzenegger years and that Gray-Davis situation...
Oh, my God.
...that we would have had this lovely period where the economy's fine in California. Like, we have the services we need. We're only getting better every moment, as we're about to discuss. And we, you know, like, shit's going fine.
Well, and that's what I have... I still contend that Jerry Brown should run for president.
Yeah.
And even if he's older than time, just say that you're going to do one term.
Yeah.
Who cares? Just be like, I will only be there for 4 years just to fix some shit.
I will do for California, for you, what I did for California.
Yes.
Just calmed everything down. No one ever talks about the California state government, and we don't have to, because it's working.
That's why.
They're just doing what they do, and we're just hanging out.
Once things are working,
there's no reason to talk.
Right.
But that's, I sort of feel like that's kind of like the position that Bernie Sanders ultimately kind of wants to walk into. He wants to be the guy that's like, guys, I will fix this.
Yeah.
Then you can carry on. I'm just going to quietly come in here in my reasonable car and live in my very, you know, practical house.
And just be the old reasonable person.
I'm just going to be an old reasonable person who's a little angry about how fucked up you made everything.
Right.
But I'm going to fix it for you. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
In any case, equal pay. We posted about this on Facebook. But Jerry Brown just signed in California Fair Pay Act on Tuesday, which requires employers to prove that any pay gap between workers is due to skill levels and or seniority and not due to gender discrimination.
Yeah, and there's another thing in this that I love that doesn't really have anything to do with at least male and female equal pay. Because there's also, you can't be... you can't be reprimanded or for talking about your weight.
And actually, this is actually a huge issue for women.
No, it totally is. But it's also... I mean,
it's a huge issue for everyone.
I get why it's more so for women, but also, like, it's...
Anyway?
It's so... And you and I have talked about this before. Anyway, it's so... You know, you're not supposed to talk with people about how much you make,
and
whether you're man, woman, or otherwise.
It doesn't benefit you. You don't benefit from... keeping quiet about your salary with people that do the same job as you.
There can no longer be retribution for you discussing amongst your coworkers what you're being paid.
It's a huge issue for women is because it has taken a long time for women to realize that they weren't being paid
fairly.
And it's partly because no one talks about how much they make.
Of course.
I also, at work, I often make a point of talking about how much I make, which I think people find a little gauche and concerning. But I think
we would all be paid more fairly if we all talked about it with each other.
If we talked about it with each other. And it is important as a woman to do, especially.
Totally.
Even if you're not getting the information back, because yeah. it does. It was like, this is how I found out that in my old job, a coworker who had been doing the same job as me for longer was making less money than me. And he was a man. Yeah, and I was like, you have to, you should be getting paid more than me. You've been here longer. What are you doing? Like, we need to get raises.
Yeah.
Like, but it, I mean, it didn't end up benefiting me personally, but it ended up benefiting all of us ultimately.
Yeah.
Because where does my salary go if the person who's been doing the job longer makes less?
Yeah.
Nowhere. Like, in any case, he signed it in at Rosie the Riveter Park in Richmond.
Right. Well, and it went even further because a lot of people, ways that employers have gotten around equal pay
There's
laws
loopholes.
In the past is to say equal pay for equal work. And, you know, people like to say that even on the left as just sort of like a talking point. But the problem is that employers can say it wasn't exactly equal work, even if there's just like literally one thing in the job description
that was slightly different.
So this law goes a step further and says it's equal pay for substantially similar work.
Yeah,
which is genius.
Yeah, that's
because
that's
now
a
there's,
huge difference.
There's no way that employers can... You know, I mean, if it's basically the same job, that's all that matters.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to be
exactly the same to the
job.
Letter.
Right.
And that's how it should be.
That's how it should be. Right.
So in any case, we did that.
So that,
which
just
is
for starters.
Killer.
Yeah.
Then we did it.
Yes.
Jerry Brown on Saturday just signed into law a bill that would automatically enroll citizens to vote when they renew their driver's license.
Yes.
We are going to automatically register people to vote.
Millions of more people.
This is what we should be doing everywhere. You shouldn't have to register to vote.
Totally.
Everybody knows that.
Well, Oregon did this earlier
this year. We're the second state
now.
I'm sad we're not the first, but I am so excited that we're the second.
I don't even
because
care. Yeah,
exactly. I did not see us coming in so early in the game.
I know.
I'm very excited about this. This is what every state should be doing.
Yeah.
This is what America federally should be doing. You should be automatically registered to vote.
Of course.
Regardless. You shouldn't even have to register. You should just be able to go vote.
Yeah, I agree.
But... this is going to make a huge difference in terms of, I think, probably in terms of turnout, because there are people every election year who are like, oh, I would vote, but I didn't register in time.
And California is notoriously bad with turnout, and we're also notoriously bad with percentage of our population who is actually registered to vote.
And
we
did not have same-day registration here. So you couldn't go to the polls and register at the polls.
Right.
So if you didn't register in time, you were just shit out of luck.
Yeah.
And that isn't acceptable. Because if you want to vote on election day, even if you didn't think to register,
voting should be the easiest thing that you get to do.
It should be the easiest thing that you get to do.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's very exciting.
Yeah.
That's almost too exciting.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to do with my excitement.
But we didn't stop there.
We finally are going to solve the problem of people at the farmer's market approaching me repeatedly to get me to sign a petition for right to die legislation.
Right. Because they've got it. What are those going to people do on Sundays?
They're maybe food shop. I don't know. It could be nice for them.
Yeah.
We finally passed a right to die law here.
And we didn't really know how this was going to go because before Brown signed it, he had not really given any indication. And he, you know, I mean, obviously he's a Democrat and we've got a, you know, super majority here.
Right.
So we've been signing a lot of things. But I mean, I think he sort of likes to sort of have himself fashioned as a sort of, you know, moderate sort of-ish kind of.
Or he likes to seem
at least like
reasonable.
A reasonable person. And like, I think he was struggling with this just because, you know, I mean, it's... You know, we're calling it the right to die. It's assisted suicide, basically. So, I mean, he didn't know, but he came out really sort of super in favor of it just for his own personal reasons.
Right, it was based on his reflections on, quote, what I would want in the face of my own death. Here's why, because he's a million years old.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, when you're a million years old, you maybe start thinking about whether if you were in excruciating pain, you would want right to die legislation to be in your
state. He said, I am certain, however, that it would be a comfort to be able to consider the options afforded by this bill, and I wouldn't deny that right to others. And I think that's the point.
That's the point.
There it is.
Yeah.
He gets it, Jerry Brown.
He gets it.
It's a person who gets it.
It's a person who gets it. He gets it in every matter except when it comes to charter schools. Where I still just, I need him to stop with that. I have some thoughts. I'm happy to share them with him if he's listening.
He'd probably listen.
I feel like he's the kind of person that, like, maybe if you met him in the right context, you would be like my state assemblyman in New York, who just gives you his phone number and you can just call and he'll answer the phone and just chat with you about whatever. He's written me long emails about issues that, you know, you feel like he may not be empowered to do anything in the state assembly, but he's listening.
Yeah.
He'll talk with you about stuff.
Yeah.
So in any case, that's the news. The first Democratic debate is on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's on CNN.
We're going to be tweeting it.
We're going to be tweeting it. We recommend that you watch it along with us because otherwise you won't understand what our tweets are about. And that would be a shame.
Because, look, The best part of both of the Republican debates were Bernie Sanders live tweeting them.
Duh.
Bernie Sanders is not going to be able to live tweet this.
No. So, and as we've said in our blog post, if he manages that, he should just automatically be president.
Exactly. So in Bernie Sanders' live tweeting absence,
right.
Let us
in his stead, let us live tweet the event for you.
Yeah.
We're on it. We're going to do a great job.
Yeah.
We think it's important that just because there's not 17 people running in this primary, it's just as important that you watch this one.
Yeah, you have to.
We want
to
find out. First of all, I'm dying to see how Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders interact.
I am too.
It's going to be fascinating.
Right.
Because the two of them are really, she's trying to pretend he doesn't exist.
Yes.
He's trying to pretend like he never takes shots at her.
Right.
While he is only able to take shots at her because he accidentally is taking shots at her just by speaking his own mind.
Yeah.
And like we said, we're interested in seeing how it's spun by the media. You know, we had sort of a disagreement, a rare disagreement between us about how it will be spun and what the results of that spin will be.
Well, one thing that I think is going to be, and honestly, people aren't going to necessarily even care that he's there, but I think that Bernie Sanders is going to be probably helped by Martin O'Malley's presence there, because Martin O'Malley is not afraid to rag on Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So on some level,
because he has to be able to take her on in order to have people remember who he is.
Yeah. So I think Bernie can sort of let the other three,
just sort of eat each other.
Take her out and then, just be the adult.
I'm very curious to see how Lincoln Chafee fares.
I am too.
I'm just curious to see what he looks like these days.
I wonder if he's going to remember what party he's from.
It might be hard.
Yeah.
It might not matter because he'll be standing next to Jim Webb, a Republican. So
he'll just talk
about the good old days.
They might just confuse each other further.
Exactly.
It's hard to know.
We don't know what party anyone's from.
No.
But it should be a good time. It's taking place in Vegas.
It's in Vegas.
So I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Probably nothing fun.
Let be a lady.
Those guys don't seem like they're super fun. So I don't know if it will be them having a fun time in Vegas. But we'll be here with you on Tuesday to watch it.
Right.
And if you haven't, read our rundown before the debate starts. And if you have done that, wait until Thursday when we're going to post yet another interesting blog post that will change your understanding of the presidential race. We're committed. This is our time.
It's happening.
This is the era that we podcast for. We started in a presidential year, and we are going to do this one right.
That's right.
We're getting an earlier start this time, and it's great. Mm-hmm. So we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.